Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, a court in South Africa hears an evaluation of the mental health of Oscar Pistorius.
At the time of the alleged offences, the accused did not suffer from a mental disorder or mental defect that affected his ability to distinguish between rightful or wrongful nature of his deeds.
And the popular Egyptian satirist Bassem Youssef tells Deutsche Welle's Global Media Forum about his fight for freedom of expression.
We used humor, laughter, music to stand for values of freedom, coexistence, and to face both religious fascism and false patriotism.
These stories and more to come in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
A panel of psychiatric and psychology experts appointed by the North Gauteng High Court in Pretoria to assess the mental state of Oscar Pistorius at the time when he shot and killed his girlfriend River Steenkamp has delivered its findings. The panel found that he did not suffer from mental disorder or any other mental illness that could have made him unaware of his actions. The trial of the star athlete resumed on Monday after he completed a mental examination lasting 30 days. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
On May 20, 2014, the Pretoria High Court ruled that Oscar Pistorius be sent for mental evaluation to determine if he was criminally responsible at the time of committing the offence and if he was able to appreciate the wrongfulness of his actions. This was after defence witness Meryl Foster, a forensic psychologist who examined Pistorius, informed the court that the accused suffered from general anxiety disorder. On Monday, State Prosecutor Gerinel read the medical examination findings to the court, starting first with the one produced by a team of three psychiatrists.
As far as that report is concerned, my lady, the important portion is paragraph C, which indicates that at the time of the alleged offences, the accused did not suffer from a mental disorder or mental defect that affected his ability to distinguish between rightful or wrongful nature of his deeds.
He then read the report from the psychologist.
Mr. Pistorius did not suffer from a mental illness at the time of the commission of the offence that would have rendered him criminally not responsible for the offences charged.
Both prosecution and the defence indicated their acceptance of the findings, though admitting there might be parts of it that would be revisited at a later stage. And clinical psychologist Dorian Whale explains why Meryl Foster's findings that Oscar suffered from general anxiety disorder could still be relevant.
Oscar Pistorius was primed in two ways. One is that he was hypervigilant and might have seen the world as a more hostile place. So, for instance, if you hear a noise, you might investigate the noise. If he hears a noise because of past history and experience and so on, he might see an intruder much more quickly.
Once the reports were heard in court, Pistorius' trial then immediately proceeded, with defense lawyer Barry Roo calling to the stand the first of his remaining four witnesses. Dr. Gary Fesfeld, Pistorius' orthopedic surgeon from the time he was a child, outlined details of how Pistorius' amputation affected his balance and movement. But in cross-examination, State Prosecutor Gerinel argued that on the night of the shooting, Oscar moved around and fired four gunshots while on his thumbs, despite his claim that he easily fell when he walked without putting on his prosthetic legs. Pistorius shot and killed his girlfriend River Steenkamp through a locked toilet door on the 14th of February 2013. He claims he mistook her for an intruder at his house, but the state argues that he intentionally shot River after she locked herself in the toilet following an argument between the two.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting. Well, he has been following closely Pistorius' trial since it began. I spoke to him before we came on air, and I started by asking him how much of a setback this report was for the defense team.
For sure, the defense did not ask for Pistorius' mental examination. I think that is the first point that we should look at. It is the state that requested for that examination. As such, I think the defense, what they wanted to do was to find circumstances in which Oscar could have acted without being in control. Of course, definitely it is a blow to the defense, but not to an extent whereby it was expected that maybe Oscar would be discharged and said to have acted insane in such a way. The defense knew that won't happen. But now that Pistorius claims the shooting was involving an action done out of fear, you remember he said he didn't shoot intentionally, but it was a reflex action that caused him to shoot. It will be difficult now for the defense to find another reason of why he could have done that, because the court has been told he was sane, he was aware of what he was doing, and he was able to control that. But still, if we look at the testimony that was given by the defense witness, Meryl Fuster, saying Oscar suffered from general anxiety disorder, that could have strengthened the case, but in the sense that now it has been disputed, the defense is left with very few chances to maneuver to justify why Oscar would have acted in a way that a sane person could not do, like it has been testified or confirmed that he was sane and sound.
Now, we understand both the prosecution and defense lawyer have accepted the report. Does this mean, or can we conclude, that Oscar Pistorius could be found guilty of killing River Steenkamp?
No, not really. Remember, this had just been one of the defense's missiles, if I can put it in such a way. It has been one of the points that defense wanted to use. But they still have a lot in their bag. They still argue that Oscar thought there was an intruder in the toilet, which to them sounds to be reasonable for him to act in such a way. They still want to use Oscar's disability as something that would make him act in a defensive way rather than thinking first. And they still want to dispute the state testimony that River was heard screaming, saying he didn't scream. This is why Oscar kept shooting and discovered later it was River. So the defense still has some ammunition in the bag. However, their version should be reasonable for the court to accept it, which is now looking very difficult for the defense. It is a position that no one will want to be in where the defense is right now, but there are still chances they could provide a version which could at least reduce Oscar's sentence.
I was speaking to DW's Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Deutsche Welle's annual Global Media Forum has now got underway here in Bonn, Germany. The forum provides a platform for more than 2,000 media representatives and experts from the fields of development, science and culture. One of the key speakers on Monday was Egyptian satirist Bassem Youssef, who sprang to fame with a satirical news show that has been compared to The Daily Show by Jon Stewart in the United States. But his biting criticism of authoritarian regimes will be understood in many parts of the world. The following report is now presented by Victoria Engels.
Bassem Youssef is Egypt's most popular satirist and was voted one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine 2013. He hosted a program called Al Bername. It started off as a homemade show in 2011, which was uploaded via YouTube. The program went viral and Youssef became a star. He was offered a deal with the Egyptian TV company ONTV. Deutsche Welle also broadcast the show on its Arabic television service. Youssef and his team harshly criticized Egyptian presidents and politicians, first Mohamed Morsi and then El Sisi.
We used humor, laughter, music to stand for values of freedom, coexistence, and to face both religious fascism and false patriotism.
On the 2nd of June, Bassem Youssef announced the cancellation of his show. The pressure on the station airing it had apparently become too big. Put another way, fear of negative consequences for those involved in the show had become too great. As Youssef himself remarked in the last episode of the show, Egypt is witnessing its most glorious days of freedom, and I'll cut off the tongue of anyone who says different. Egypt's fight for a true democratic society had started with the Arab Spring. Yusuf believes the right to freedom of speech and opinion is a core value of any democratic society, especially if it means criticizing those in power. But it seems those in power in Egypt are not going to tolerate this kind of democracy. Instead, Yusuf says they have turned to that greatest weapon of all to suppress an opinion they do not like.
Those who were too annoyed with us and with our message used a different weapon, the most effective weapon of all, fear.
Bassem Yusuf, one of a number of keynote speakers at this year's Global Media Forum here at Deutsche Welle in Bonn. The forum runs until Wednesday.
Victoria Engels reporting. At least 50 people have been killed in an attack on a church in Borno State, northeastern Nigeria. Witnesses say the gunmen hurled grenades at worshippers and fired on those who tried to run away. Survivors said the military ignored distress calls made after the attack began. Local people, they say, were left defenseless. The raid is being blamed on the Islamist group Boko Haram. DW's Adrian Krish is in northern Nigeria and asked him first what this told us about the capabilities of the Nigerian army.
Well, it actually tells us a lot about the army's inability. In Borno, where the attack happened, the state of emergency was imposed more than 1 year ago and still receive almost daily reports of attacks by Boko Haram. 20% of the Nigerian budget is already allocated for security service, but especially in those villages around Chibok, people complain that they don't see any improvements. I just met some people who live in Chibok and the surrounding villages, and they say since the girls were abducted from there in April, there's been no visible increase of security personnel. Just a few soldiers stay in Chibok and the village of Chibok itself, and the next army barracks are more than 1 hour away by car, that is. And that is why it is also possible for the terrorists to attack several villages over a time frame of several hours. But one also has to admit it is difficult for the army, since the area where Boko Haram operates is really huge.
Attacks in any part of Nigeria are becoming a daily occurrence. Is there a general sense of insecurity where you are?
Well, I'm in Yola now, the capital of the state Adamawa, and here is the state if emergency was also imposed. However, there's a kind of normal life on the streets here because the last attacks were more than 2 years ago in town. But the fear of terroristic attacks is visible here, and as it is as well in other towns like Abuja, Kano or Bauchi. In the villages in the northern part of Adamawa state and in Borno, the situation, of course, is much worse. People there live in constant fear for their lives, and attacks can happen any time.
What kind of stories have the people you've met and talked to been telling you about the whole insurgency?
A cameraman went to Chibok to film for DW's TV program, and he also talked to the people who just ran away from the attacked villages, and they told us of more than 30 killed people. But let's listen into this man whose wife and children were actually killed.
They arrived early in the morning and attacked our village. They pursued people who tried to run away on their motorbikes. The security forces were nowhere to be seen. They promise us a lot, but nothing ever happens. The government has failed.
A mother of one of the abducted Chibok girls also told me that she can only sleep with one eye open, and every time she hears a motorbike or a car in the night, she fears that the next attack might happen. So it is a terrible situation for the people on the ground. Muslims and Christians there live together in this area for many years, and now both groups are actually targeted almost on a daily basis.
And I was speaking to DW's Adrian Krish, who is currently in Adamawa State, northern Nigeria.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the 10th episode of our radio drama series, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. We're looking at the story of legal and illegal migration by Africans to what is seen as the Promised Land, Europe. Linda has been working illegally as a waitress in a European nightclub, a job her friend Florence got her into. Back home in Africa, Chivasi hadn't heard from Linda in a long time and was starting to worry. So he went to her parents' house to ask if everything was all right. While he was there, he discovered that Linda's parents were having financial difficulties. They gave him Florence's number to try to reach Linda, But when he called, Florence answered him rudely, told him he should forget about his fiancée, and hung up. It was a wake-up call for Linda, though. She's decided she should take a break and go home for a holiday. Meanwhile, our friends Farahani and Sule in the north of Africa had a big argument about whether to flee their country, which is troubled by political violence. Farahani has decided to make another attempt to get to Europe, leaving behind his best friend Sule. Today's episode, Two Faces of Migration, opens at the Maraga family home, where Linda has suddenly arrived from Europe for a surprise visit. Her parents are surprised by how much their daughter has changed. She seems like another person altogether. Let's listen as they chat over supper.
Ah, these bloodthirsty mosquitoes.
Oh, I still can't believe my eyes. Linda, you're really here.
When I opened the door and saw you standing there with all your luggage, I thought I must be dreaming. This is the best surprise of my life.
Dad, Mom, do you mind if I close the windows?
No.
The mosquitoes are getting in.
Of course, do whatever you like. This is your home, Linda. But tell us more about Europe. Mm-hmm. Your studies, your job, your friends. You look so different.
Yes, you must be earning a lot of money. You're wearing such nice clothes and shoes. New mobile phone, new laptop, new wristwatch.
New Linda. That's the best way to put it. A new Linda. So tell us, what have you been doing to afford all this?
Well, I'm in the service industry, and in Europe that pays well. Listen, I'm sorry, but if you don't mind, I'd like to go out and meet my friends.
No, of course.
Of course.
I realize things must seem rather different at home these days, Linda. We lost our jobs. They've disconnected the electricity supply because we couldn't pay the bill. That's why we're sitting in the dark.
Oh, yeah. I'm really sorry about that. Here's 500 euros. That will be enough for now, won't it?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Linda. Thank you so much.
Linda is behaving like a rich, considerate, generous daughter. But she hasn't really explained to her parents what exactly she's doing to earn money like this. And her parents seem happy not to ask. Later on, Linda joins some of her old friends at a local pub, a place she never used to go before. Among them are Chivasi and Linda's old school friend, Dora.
Oh, it's so good to be back, to see all of you. It's great that you could all come on such short notice.
You can thank Facebook for that.
Yes, that was quite a surprise. Mm-hmm. I thought you must be joking when I saw your status update. Back home for a week. Let's all meet up tonight.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be the first to know if you're planning to come home.
Wow, Linda. You look so, so cool.
Thank you.
I don't know what it is about Europe, but everyone who goes there seems to come back prettier, classier, and healthier.
Yeah. And richer, don't forget.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, what can I say? I have a good life there, and I'm studying a subject I love and earning good money in my part-time job. Ah. In other words, I'm having the time of my life.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Hey, all the drinks and food are on me tonight, so please eat and drink as much as you'd like.
Linda, wow. I need to come over and join you. Maybe you can help me find a family where I can work as a living au pair or a college that offers exchange programs.
Dora, it's not that simple, you know. With the visa and everything.
But really? You did it.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I never thought that after such a short time, you'd be able to come back home, having earned enough money to pay for your ticket. Mm-hmm. That is, unless somebody else paid it for you.
What? I sense some jealousy here from Chivasi.
Jealousy? Me? No. I have no reason to be jealous, do I? I love Linda, and I would do anything to be with her, even if it meant crossing the ocean.
Okay.
Really? Would you do that for me?
Of course.
I'd be so happy if you did that. It would be wonderful to be together with you in Europe.
Okay, you two, that's enough.
What?
We came here to party, not to plan our future. Yeah. Come on, everybody, let's get up and dance.
Hey.
As Linda and her friends dance the night away, drinking and partying at Linda's expense, back on the North African coast, Farahani has made up his mind. he and a small group of other migrants have paid a human trafficker to take them across to Europe, and they're now being tossed up and down on the stormy Mediterranean Sea. They're all praying that the European border guards won't intercept their boat and send them all back. But a huge surprise is in store for them. The danger this time is much closer than they think. Listen on.
Hey, okay? I've done my best to avoid all the border guards. We've crossed into European waters, and we're only a few kilometers from the shore. I can't go any further than this.
What?
From here on, it's up to you. You can see the coastline over there. In the distance, all you need to do now is swim until you reach the shore.
No!
Until they find you in the water.
No! You cannot do that.
Yeah, you can't do this. We paid you for the full trip. Not to take us halfway.
Get a move on. There's no time to waste. If they catch us here, we'll all be deported. Remember, don't tell them where you've come from unless your country is a war zone. I have to go back. Decide for yourself. Jump in the water or come back to Africa with me.
In the water.
God be with me.
Africa never.
Farahani finds himself struggling against high waves and a current that's trying to sweep him back out to sea. All around him, he can hear the cries of his fellow migrants as they fight for their lives in the water. All he can think of is that he has to keep swimming. Keep swimming until he reaches the promised land. Farahani keeps going for about 2 hours, longer than he ever thought possible. Yet the shore seems as far away as ever. Just as his strength is finally at an end, he hears a motorboat coming closer and a voice with a European accent calling out.
Grab the life jacket! Hey! Grab the life jacket! Okay, pull him up. Come on, pull him up on deck.
Who are you?
We are officers of Frontex, the agency in charge of securing the European border. You have crossed into our waters illegally. Who are you? And where do you come from? Are you from Africa, Asia, or the Middle East? You look like an Arab to me. Am I right? Are there more like you in the water? There are more out there. More in the water. Keep going. Take the boat further out. Quick, no time to lose.
Farahani's dream has finally come true. Wet, cold, hungry, thirsty, and exhausted, he's nonetheless managed to sneak into Europe. But what awaits him there? And what will Linda's visit home mean for her friends and family? Tune in again next time to find out. If you'd like to take part in a discussion about this episode on the different faces of migration in Europe and in Africa, you can do so by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. And to listen to this episode again, simply log on to dw.de/destinationeurope. Until then, goodbye for now and take care.
And now, a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. The murder trial of Oscar Pistorius resumed on Monday, with experts saying they had found no sign of mental illness that could have made him unaware of his actions. The three-day annual Global Media Forum got underway here in Bonn, Germany, bringing together more than 2,000 media representatives and experts. At least 50 people were killed in an attack on a church in Borno State, northeastern Nigeria, which is being blamed on Boko Haram militants. And there we come to the end of the program. If you have any comments or suggestions, please send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or a text message to +49160 957 59510. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time, and I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany, saying take care.